Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can find the books, people, recipes, restaurants, value wines, and easy cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Traditions. You know, some traditions make you feel great, especially when they connect you to friends or family. Two of my friends go apple picking, to which they bring a block of cheddar cheese, a baguette, picnic wear, some glasses, and a bottle of wine, followed by leaf peeping. Every year, this is what these women do as a couple in October. Holidays involve traditions, some loved, some not so much. People invent their own traditions. We ask you to tell us about your tradition when we open the phones. Bruce Clements is back. He's a former board chair of the Children's Law Center in Hartford and a mediator. Bruce, in all these years I've known you, I have never asked you if you have a tradition. Do you have one?
Well, I'm coming up with one at this moment, yes. And I never thought of it as a tradition until I knew we were going to have this conversation. We have a cottage on Lake Michigan, or near Lake Michigan, over the dune from Lake Michigan. And we have gone there between 2 or 3 weeks and a whole summer for 50 years. The last things we do are, of course, to pack up and make sure that the refrigerator is empty and et cetera, et cetera. So, right? We all know what kind of things. And then I get the kids, and though the kids are now grown up, I get Hannah in the car, and I go back in the house. I do a last check around, and I stand in the living room, and I say to the spiders, okay, the house is yours until next June. And I don't know when I started doing that. I know it was when the children were very young, because I remember doing it and then closing and locking the door and getting into the car and finding, you know, the children in the back and Hannah waiting and the motor running. So it's 40 years anyway.
Wow. And this is you by yourself. You're not with the kids when you do this.
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have had their breakfast and they've got their, you know, there's the whole routines that they go through. And then it's just the house and the spiders.
Very funny.
Yeah.
Right, well, so let's look at this for a second. We're going to open the phones to you at 203-776-WNPR. Tell us about your tradition, whether it's one that's kind of offbeat, you made up yourself, whether it's some time-honored thing that you've inherited somehow from your family and people before you. Whatever it is, we're exploring traditions on the show. 203-776-9677. What do you think traditions give us, Bruce?
Well, they give us a sense of continuity that there are some things in the world that don't change, some things that are that absolutely belong to us and to those who are closest to us and who share those things. I think it more than maybe I don't know maybe more than anything else. I think it is that it emphasizes the steadiness, the continuity of your life with people you love.
I was thinking about a few traditions that I've had. I remember back in my life, I would go to Provincetown on the Cape with a bunch of friends, and that group changed, although there were some core people. Every Memorial Day, this is what we did, and this went on for about 20 years, and then somehow it just fell apart. But there was something. Oh, and then we'd have one of pizza and watching TV on Sunday nights. It was something about these kinds of traditions that meant that were steadying to me in some way.
And if they're threatened, or if your presence is delayed or denied, there really is a sense of deprivation that you've missed a heartbeat in your life.
And not everybody feels that way. There were one or two people in the pizza TV watching group who said, you know, they could kind of care less if it fell apart. And I remember feeling so sad about that because it meant so much to me.
Absolutely. That was just That was cruel. Why did you ever invite me?
I kind of thought so. we want to hear from you about your traditions. Jocelyn Faith Middleton, welcome to the show. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, my husband and I, I was not a traditionalist growing up. I was one of eight, but my husband, when I started dating him over 24 years ago, he had family traditions that we have taken on. And we go every year to Vermont on Columbus Day weekend. And we've been doing this for many, many years. And now my kids and I and my husband and still with his extended family, we still do it every year. And it's exciting. The kids always look forward to it.
And is that for the purpose of leaf peeping? Because I know a lot of people have that tradition. When it's this time of year, they set aside the particular weekend and go on the same route. And
exactly.
And if you want to do that, you can go, by the way, you can go to the Connecticut Department of Environmental Protection or in New York, it's something else, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and type in fall foliage, and they have routes for you to follow if you've never done it before, if you want to start a tradition. So your purpose was, did you sleep over? And
yes, we stayed at a house over there for an entire weekend, and there's a Newfane Fair in Newfane, Vermont that we go to, and it's everyone. It's his cousins, their children, his uncles, and everyone's there, and he's been doing it since before his parents had him. And we still do it, and we all stay with his family and his siblings and their children in the same home. So it's exciting. The kids enjoy it, and I've enjoyed it for many years. And there's, you know, it's just something that the kids do look forward to, and I look forward to. And it's a traditions type of thing. We also go pumpkin picking and cut down our own Christmas tree, and all these traditions my kids just look forward to every year. Wouldn't be the same without doing them.
Cutting the tree. I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. Go
How
ahead.
Old are your children?
Tessa's now 14 and Titus is 8.
Oh, it's great ages to imprint that permanently.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Every year I'm like, oh, I don't want them to grow up, but, you know, it happens, but I enjoy every minute of it. So.
And they'll remember. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Bruce, Jocelyn said, used a phrase probably in an offhand way. She said, you know, I'm not much of a traditionalist. And I thought, you know, there is something... Some tone of conservative attached to the word tradition.
That's right. There is, isn't there?
It didn't hit me till just a second.
Uh-huh. And are you, is it a almost political badge not to be a traditionalist?
I don't know. We did this show a million years ago just to see what people would say. And someone had made up a tradition, and it was called the Backwards Party. And each year they had this party, and you were supposed to come with the theme backwards. You made it up any way you wanted. People would come with their clothes on backwards. People would walk in the door backwards. They served a meal at the party that started with dessert and went in reverse. So I thought that was hysterical and certainly not what you would consider a conservative approach to the world.
Well, it is mixed, isn't it? I mean, you can probably do some very radical stuff as part of a tradition. I mean,
well, sure.
We have a friend in Michigan who is a lawyer, and he died some years ago. But for every summer, on the first Sunday night in August, for some reason, maybe that was because he had his August vacation, we would get to his property, which was right next to Lake Michigan and had no building on it, and he would have built a tower of scrap wood, absolute tower of scrap wood, and he would set fire to it. And it was like a burning house. I mean, it's the only time in my life when I have felt driven back by fire and then driven back again. And here was a guy who was, you know, very conservative, politically conservative, personally conservative. But when he was at that fire, he was dancing like you know, some very strange primitive figure.
Oh, that's a good, I like that scene. Jackie Faith Middleton with Bruce Clements. We're talking about traditions. Go ahead, Jackie.
Hi, Faith. Hi. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thanks for being on.
I'll try to be succinct. Our tradition started when the minister at our church approached my husband and myself when we were young parents of a 18-month-old asking us to be the youth group leaders. And he said, hey, I just found out there's this camp for Lutherans up in Freedom, New Hampshire on Lake Ossipee. Would you bring the youth group up there? And our deal was yes, but you have to let us drag along our 18-month-old. And that was in 1987. And she's 25 now, and she's got a 21-year-old sister who we call the Calumet Kid, because 9 months to the day she was born, and she's 21. But it's Camp Calumet Lutheran in New Hampshire, on Lake Ossipee in Freedom. It's been a camp in the Lutheran Synod, the New England Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church, since the late 60s.
So tell me this, Jackie. Why do you continue to go back?
My kids went to resident camp there. They became counselors in training. They became counselors. They have a program that develops leadership skills in mm-hmm. young people. And then across the street from the lake is the conference center, and they have programming all year long uh-huh. for families.
There's substance attached to this.
Yes,
it probably keeps changing.
And the families, they keep going back, and so we've watched ourselves age, uh-huh. and we've watched our children grow from infancy to adulthood, and we go back the same weeks every year, and we meet up with the same people, and we've watched life happen, you know, and we keep in touch throughout the year, and
it's just
a wonderful thing, and
Thank
it's a
you.
Great tradition.
Thanks so. Very much. Glad to hear from you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
And when you arrive at such a place, it's coming home. It absolutely is coming home. Even though you're there only 2 weeks of the year, and even though you don't see the other, your neighbors, your fellow citizens of this other world of yours, you walk into that conference center or that hotel or that house, and it's just coming home.
Bruce, there was a tradition in Willimantic, as you know, of what's called the Boombox Parade. Does that still go on?
It does still go on.
Can you describe it?
Yes, I can. It started when my wife Hannah was first selectman there. And it started because we had scheduled a band to lead our parade, and it was a National Guard band, and their scheduler had scheduled them in two towns, Willimantic and someplace a lot bigger. So we heard 2 days before the 4th of July, we heard on the 2nd of July, that, oops, they weren't coming. And someone said, well, you know what we can do? We'll get the radio station, WILI, to play band music, and we'll invite everybody to bring a boombox. And lots of people at that time had these big portable radios that put on their shoulders. And anybody who wants to parade can parade. This is not going to be a formal parade. You want to parade, you want to show up in a convertible with a giraffe on your shoulder, cool. And now the town green is just jammed with people starting at 8:30 in the morning. The parade lasts an hour and a half. There are, you know, public officials and so on who realize this is a major, major place where people can be reached. And it's simply wonderful. And the 4th of July in which it started, we got a call from WBBM in Chicago, saying, we hear there is this parade. Can you tell us about it?
Well, it's so fantastic. That is a great tradition.
It is.
Yeah, it really is. So as you can hear, if people make up their own, you can be as inventive, as creative as you want, the backwards party, the boombox parade, or a traditionalist. Maybe it's something you've inherited from your family, the role. Maybe somebody else used to do it. Now it's up to you. What are these things that have some kind of comfort or anchoring in your life, because you just show up and do them over again? They sometimes provide a sense of connection. I know that it's possible that some traditions cause a fair amount of eye rolling, because maybe you have to see a group of people you don't want to see over and over again. But so many others are anchoring. Here's what we're going to do. You're welcome to call in at 203-776-WNPR. Bruce Clements is staying with us, and we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. find what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on programs to find the Faith Middleton Show. Bruce Clements is with me once again. We'd like to talk about traditions. What's yours? Invented or one you carry on through inheritance? There's leaf peeping every fall. And, Bruce, I was thinking about the promise that I know some parents make to their children. And that promise is, at the first snowfall, during reasonable hours, out we go with a jug of maple syrup to make sugar on snow. And it is one of the best bowls of granita that you will ever have.
Great, great. You know, when you were talking a minute ago about, you mentioned traditional leaders, and that's a critical time in a tradition, when the person who always made the soup or always started the fire or always made the calls is not there. And then someone has to step up and take on the mantle of running that tradition. And it is, I think, probably usually kind of hard. I know I'm not going to do this as well as Minerva did it, and yet the tradition is so important, and the people connected to the doing of it are so much geared to it that someone then has to step up and be the one who does the calling or makes the soup or whatever.
Bruce, we're going to find out about Dan's tradition, and I want to ask you after he speaks, if you know of anyone who has a tradition of reading something each year, a particular thing. Dan, Faith Middleton, and Bruce Clements, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon. How are you?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
My wife and I have a tradition. Our daughter is a professional artist, and she's on the faculty of an art school up in Boston. And every time that she has an opening of her work, we bring her a giant mason jar full of M&Ms. And we've been doing this since she started displaying her artwork as a student in high school. And it's not an opening unless we have the, 4 pounds of M&Ms in the mason jar.
And how did that start? She obviously began as an M&M fan.
Well, in our home, M&Ms is a separate food group.
Uh-huh, yeah. That's understandable.
Okay. And I'm not quite sure how it started. I was holding out for pepperoni at every opening, but M&M's won out. And she's got a show opening in a couple of weeks. And my wife said to me the other night, she goes, we've got to go buy, the M&M's for the show. And I said, we can really kind of wait till the night before, can't we?
What do you do? Do you put them on the table when you get there?
Yeah, we put them on the table with the wine and the champagne and the hors d'oeuvres and sitting in the middle of all that. In a way, it's kind of grounding her that, you may be drinking red wine and you may be eating, salmon, but these are the roots you came from. When you were a kid in high school, we put out M&Ms for you and stuff like that. So part of it reminds her of where she came from while acknowledging where she is going.
And also, not only where she came from, but in some fundamental way, who she still is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is this in a gallery?
Yes, it's in a gallery. She had her master's thesis show. We did it there. We did it through undergraduate shows. And
she's
now
probably warned the gallery. She probably has to tell the gallery, and you must be prepared for my parents to come with a big jug of M&Ms. It's so funny.
We like to think we're kind of cool when we do this.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Well, absolutely, you are.
You're the best.
It's kind of an unusual thing, and if we don't do it, I would feel really, really strange. And we're happy that she's successful as an artist, because it's such a hard field like musicians to succeed in. And it's also kind of like, hey, here are the M&Ms.
Yeah, I know I know what you mean. Thank you so much for calling. I love
that
story.
Thank you for your show.
Oh, no, thanks. So,
if you've got a past, you've got a future.
Yeah, what a great tradition he just spoke of. Bruce, do you know of anyone who reads something every year?
Yes, I had a neighbor in Connecticut, Eastford, Connecticut, who read the Declaration of Independence on every 4th of July. And it's a remarkable document. It always reminds you of what a practical matter this break was. It's a document where you see the signers, the composers, reaching out to interest groups. So it's politically interesting, it's inspiring, and I came back to it every year.
I was thinking there are community traditions. You know, here's one person you just described taking it upon himself to do this. And there are these events that towns put on. Certainly there's the caroling in the little square of the town or spot in the city. And there is, I was thinking about Essex, Connecticut, which has this Punxsutawney Pete Groundhog Day thing where you're trying to figure out if he's seen his shadow, and there's this giant puppet of him. But the best part is that people from town are invited, or outsiders, to bring something to bang. You know, just, you know, like a spoon and a pot, and they walk down the street and people are clanging things. It's kind of a nutty, wonderful, eccentric event.
And that makes me think that as conservative as the idea of tradition is, and the repetition of tradition is, there are traditions which permit you to be a little crazy. I mean, you're talking about the backward party before, I think, is such a tradition. You know, put on all your clothes backwards, get in your car, and try to party. And, you know, things that you would just not do, but because they're traditional, and because in some sense the community that's part of that tradition expects it of you, you can be or at least appear radical.
Bruce Clemens, we have Marcia on the line. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Faith and Bruce. My tradition goes back to the early 1980s. When I was newly married, I found a recipe in a cookbook of a Danish pastry. And it wasn't a difficult recipe, but it was pretty involved. So as I met some new neighbors, I invited them over. And we still to this day meet one or two days in November and bake up a storm of these recipes. And it's the kind of dough that you put butter in between, and you have to roll it and fold it and put it in the refrigerator and wait a half hour. So that's when we drink our wine, and then we take it out and roll it and fold it again. And we do that like five or six times, so you get all kinds of layers of flaky dough. And we've been doing it since the kids were small, and now that we don't see each other as much, it's a great time for us to get together.
Same recipe.
The same recipe, yeah.
How many years is this?
Oh, so 1985. You do the math.
Wow. You're coming out a quarter century. Let's call it that.
Yeah, we have pictures along the way. We don't always have dates on things, so we kind of have to remember what we used to look like. But the second day, we roll it out into strips and put an almond pastry filling in it, and then roll it up into a wreath. And they're just beautiful, and we give them as gifts. You can make them small, medium, or large, and nobody knows how to make them except me. So they'll just stand there and stir, and I'll hand everybody an egg, and then I'll hand everybody yeast, and then I'll hand everybody butter, and they'll just go, "We couldn't do this without you."
That is great.
You're queen.
Yeah.
You are queen of the Danish.
I am. I have a big recipe on the refrigerator that I refer to, and then this way they can talk and enjoy themselves, and I'll just keep saying, "Now do this, now do that."
By my calculation, that's about 5 hours of wine. I think I'm pretty right about that, since it's 30 minutes between folding. I think so. All right, thank you.
My math says it's 2 days, but I'll...
Thank you.
Sometimes, we do the dough one day and come back the next day to put it together.
Hey, did any of your people you do this with move away?
No, everyone's still here.
Still here, yeah, okay, good. Yeah, all right, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, bye-bye. I wanted to see how far they would travel for that pastry. I'd travel a long way for that.
Amen, yes.
Bruce, I think in Japan, if I'm not mistaken, there is a tradition where people come on a certain night of the year, and they bring these square Japanese lanterns that have a candle inside. So they're square, and they glow, and they float. And the idea is that people come to this spot at a certain hour, it's night, and they let the lanterns go into the water, and the tide is going out, and it takes the lanterns. Gorgeous spectacle.
Gosh.
I've seen many photographs of this. And the idea is that each lantern carries your memory and good wishes for someone who has died. And so you see them all floating, little memorials. You see them all floating, and that's something.
Yeah, yeah. Can I tell you another tradition? I'm just remembering. But with this was, I think, perhaps not a tradition because we kept it going for 6 years and then our children grew out of it. But when our children were high school students, we did every year for about 6 years what we called our June pole party. And that involved a maypole, but it was always in June, and outdoor lighting and dancing the Virginia reel. You know, there was every one of the parties had a theme. I remember once our theme was bathtubs, and we performed plays in bathtubs and sang in our bathtubs, whatever. And it has in my heart a tradition sense because it caught up and tried to some degree to form the ethos, the culture of our family, and the people we treasured.
Wow! And who picked the plays? What did you write them?
It was always our backyard.
Well, I mean the theater pieces in the bathtub.
Oh, so I did.
You did. Okay.
One year I got it because someone called me and said, I want to do a play. I want to do a version of Marat Saad. And
no.
Marat dies in a bathtub. So this year it's bathtubs. And I said, you bet it's bathtubs.
Well, I was thinking about, you reminded me of Calvin Trillin. And he every year would go to, when his wife Alice was alive, I don't know if they still do it, I would imagine they do, to their place in Nova Scotia. And I had some friends, we had friends in common, and who would go too. And he would write a play, and only the children could be in it. Every single year they would do this. And so they have movies of the kids through the years playing all these parts, and, you know, hilarious plays, as you can imagine.
And you do these things in a very calculated way, or at least I think I did them in a very calculated way, that you wanted to imprint an expectation and a kind of experience, communal experience, in the minds and hearts of very young children so that they would have this treasure, not necessarily always to hang on to the family tradition, but to come to value the thing itself, to value having tradition itself, and it's a great gift to children.
I was thinking as you're listening right now, you could be saying to yourself, if you don't have traditions in your family, I wish we did, but you actually can just start one. And see how long it goes. See if there's enough energy to take people to that thing over and over again. Now, it can happen that people say, okay, that's enough of that. You know?
But I think to establish such a thing does require perhaps a little egocentrism and certainly determination. Because if you view a particular way of going about things as important, As Marcia did the making of a Danish pastry, you know, this matters. And someone had to remember in the second year, and by God, for sure, it was Marcia who remembered.
There are people who are so wed. Meals at holidays there's a huge tradition about them. And some people want to get inventive with the holiday, whether it's with the main course or with the side dishes. And this can cause a lot of controversy. I remember the year I suggested to my family at Thanksgiving that we not have turkey and we have lobsters. Well, you would have thought that I had suggested that we feast on a boa constrictor. They thought that was the craziest thing, that there would be no turkey. All right, we're going to take a quick break.
So what happened? Oh, quick, tell us.
What happened?
Yes.
Oh, we had the turkey, of course.
Oh.
You know, I mean, you can't win. Oh, you just have to go where you go with tradition. I don't even suggest crazy things anymore. All right, so Bruce Clements, you stay there, and we'd love to hear from you at 203-776-WNPR as we explore traditions. We'll be right back. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR or join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. Bruce Clements is with me. We are talking about traditions. And Bruce, I just hear them mentioning the light the night for leukemia, and that is an annual event.
Yes.
Now, there's an
yes.
example of people saying, you know what, let's do this.
Yeah.
You know, we have the tradition of you know, making this walk for this cause, and so there's another form of tradition.
And it stirs great loyalty and a willingness to work very hard.
I know a group of people who on every New Year's Eve, and they freely pass out invitations to anyone who wants to come. This is in Connecticut. They go to, on New Year's Eve, mind you, the second it's midnight, they run down to the local beach and strip off their clothes and naked dip themselves in Long Island Sound and then run screaming from the water. And there you go. I've been invited several times, and I think I cannot think of. Well, I just cheer you on is what I do.
Well, the thing to do here are my instructions. When you're invited the next time, tell them they must buy a very large dryer, stuff it with towels, and if they've got the dryer running for 20 minutes, you'll do it.
Yeah, this is like. Oh, I don't know. Hey, Frank, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hi. This is a great topic.
Thanks.
We have one of these holiday traditions, that, and I can't even trace it back to when it exactly started. But every usually it's Thanksgiving weekend, but sometimes it's ported over to the next weekend or some weekend between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And we will make our gingerbread houses. All the grandkids get together at Grandma's house, my mother, and we sit down. There's like thousands of pounds of candy, and they build. Or actually decorate, because we used to build them, but now we have 9 grandkids to deal with, so that gets difficult to
yeah.
put them all in direct room all the same day. So we bring assembled gingerbread houses, and then the kids sit down and they decorate the gingerbread houses, and it's a big project, but it's an all day affair.
Are some of the kids older now?
Oh yeah, my son's 23 years old,
and he still looks forward to it.
And as long as he can get to we don't do it at Grandma's house anymore. That's part of the tradition. It was initially uh-huh. at Candlewood Lake, where she had a house. My dad and her lived up in Candlewood Lake in New Fairfield, and we'd make a weekend of it. We'd go up there, we'd have Thanksgiving, and then on probably the Saturday of Thanksgiving weekend, we'd have the houses on the dining room table. We'd have bowls full of candy, and all the kids would sit down, and you know, kids from 2 and even 1 all the way up. And we've got, my son is 23. The oldest cousin is 25. And it started with those 4, my 2 and my brother's 2.
So has somebody taken it over? Or?
Well, what happens is, well, my grandmother doesn't live there anymore. Mm-hmm. She moved down to Shelton. So yes, we've gone to different houses. We've done it at her house in Shelton. She's 84 and she's still hosting.
Wow.
But we'll go to my brother's house, and we'll all assemble up at his house. And we did it on Thanksgiving, so it was a Thanksgiving.
But she presides, right?
She's there. She's almost. I don't think there's ever been a time since we've been doing this at least since my son was born in 90.
Right, the grand dame of gingerbread houses. What a great thing!
And it got started because she built the gingerbread house when I was in middle school, elementary school for the church, and then it was auctioned off as a fundraiser. And that's where she learned how to build the gingerbread house.
Well, there's something magical about a cookie house. I mean, let's face it.
Oh, yeah.
Can't get better.
There have been moments when, you know, the house sits. Everyone brings their houses back to their house, and they usually put an honored place in the house to place them. And in our house, we would usually put it somewhere near the Christmas tree. And it would stay there, and people would pick the candy off, which is kind of gross when you think about it over time. But nevertheless, then there would be a big event in my house, at least, where we would get a hammer and just break the thing. And then, you know, sometimes we would eat pieces of it.
Yeah.
If we felt safe about it. Otherwise, they wouldn't.
Thank you so much for calling the show. I love that. Sure. You know, a gingerbread house. I think, Bruce, that's one of the greatest achievements in all of architecture.
Absolutely, it is, and there's a combination of glory and tradition and bad taste about it that is unbeatable.
There is a woman in Woodbridge, Connecticut, who for so many years would dress the stone, a big stone goose in her yard. That I don't know where'd she get some garden center. And she would dress that stone goose in her yard for every football game and holiday. And everybody driving down the road on the way to school, doing whatever they were doing, passing by, would look to see what the new attire was on the goose. When there was a slowdown in this for a while because as a prank, a bunch of kids stole the goose. And there was so much publicity in the papers about how sad this was that they gave the goose back. And then the tradition continued. I don't know if it still goes on. But I just love that. I mean, sometimes the goose would be in a cap and gown, a football uniform with a helmet. Just the best.
Yeah, talk about things that you would drive out of your way to see.
Yeah. Fred, Faith Middleton with Bruce Clements, talking about traditions, as you know.
Hi, Faith.
Hi.
My grandparents bought a farm in New Hampshire, not a working farm, but an old farm in New Hampshire in 1945. And our family has been having Thanksgiving dinner there since then. And originally, my grandfather passed away in 1954, and I was born in 1955. But every year since I can remember, we've had Thanksgiving at my grandmother's house. Now, growing up, it was very rustic. It had no electricity and no running water, and it had, you know, wood stoves and kerosene lamps, and so we've all gathered, and there'll be 30 to 35 of us sit down for dinner every year, and now it's on its fifth generation.
Wow.
So my great-grandchildren, my grandchildren and my you know, nieces and nephews' children all participate, so...
People drive from a long way to get to this.
Well, we come up from Connecticut. I live in Lebanon, and one of my sisters lives near Boston. My niece comes from Michigan. My nephew comes from San Francisco. And the nice part is my grandmother is the only person I know who never owned a television in her entire life. And so there's never been a TV there. So after dinner, everyone would... We call it the forced march. Everybody would march up the road and all bring bags and clean up any litter that was there on this older road. And we'd sit down and you spent the weekend enjoying the company of all the relatives that you hadn't seen in a long time, and nobody sat around watching TV because there wasn't one.
Yeah.
So you played games and you played cards and you just kept up on whatever was going on. It was a great experience, and now we're looking at 60-plus years.
Wow, good for you.
It's a matter.
Thank you. How many years is it, Bruce?
68.
68? You're going on 7. It's almost your 70th anniversary in that house.
My grandmother, after she retired, she lived in Stratford, and after she retired, she moved up there. And, you know, eventually we got her electricity, but she lived there till she was 95.
Wow.
She lived till 101. So,
Wow. Is it empty now?
The house stays empty most of the time. We go up there weekends and holidays and a lot in the summer. We still have an outhouse after 70 years. Oh. And so we cook two or sometimes three turkeys to feed the whole clan, usually about 50 pounds of turkey. And it's gone by the end of the week.
Oh, boy. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Fun.
Really appreciate
Thank you very
it.
Much.
Yeah. No, my pleasure. 203-776-WNPR. We're exploring tradition, whether it's one that you just created, something kind of wild that you made up just for the fun of it. It might be a little eccentric or nuts. And, other people have these sort of moving, touching stories to tell, as you can hear. I like it that they're all over the place, Bruce.
I'm thinking about Theodore Bekel and Fiddler on the Roof. And early on in that musical, he sings a song called Tradition. And halfway through, or three-quarters of the way through, he looks at the camera and he says, "And why do we have tradition?" And then there's a pause. "Because it's traditional."
I forgot about that. Oh, that's good. You know, I was thinking about my sister, and I have not missed her birthday in August in, decades. It's just unmissable. If it gets anywhere near August 20th, you know where to find me. And so every single one of those birthdays that we have been together, most of them on the beach having her dinner, but sometimes indoors, there's always a picture that we take together. And I don't think I've seen one of them. I don't know where the film goes. It's just amazing. Every year I've seen, you know, some of these pictures and you think, wow, look at us then. Look at us now. Mm-hmm. We thought we were old then. Oh, we thought, you know, what was I worried about? Look how skinny I was in that picture. It's so interesting to mark time through these traditional events.
You know, it's interesting of the six people who've called us, five of them have had food as a very important part. Mm-hmm. You know, the M&Ms, the Danish pastry, the gingerbread house, the
turkey,
Thanksgiving. Yeah. And it may be, you know, there may be a message there.
Yeah, well, you know, the one that's outside that box would be the reunion of buddies. You know, it might be the Army buddies, mm-hmm. or it might be of classmates at some particular stage where people come back for who knows why, but they do it over and over again. There's something about those that makes people want to reconnect or just see what happened. Jim Faith Middleton, maybe to be in touch with that, you know, whatever that spirit was back in that day, 203-776-9677. I'm with Bruce Clements. Go ahead, Jim.
Yes, hello, Faith, and thank you, Bruce. A wonderful show. You spoke about Backwards Day before, and I went to a wonderful summer camp, both as a camper and as a counselor, and we would always have a Backwards Day. And the year that I was a counselor, the other water ski counselor and I decided to take it a little bit further, and we did our night off at about 5:30 in the morning, and we overdid it. And we came back on campus, got in the water ski boat, and went zooming back and forth in front of the camp, screaming Yad Stravkov, which is Backwards Day, backwards. And then we came on to campus and made further fools of ourselves, and it went downhill from there.
And what did you do after you were fired?
Yeah.
Well, luckily, we were not. Well, one of the people, the other person that took part in it with me, was the main director's son. Is now
lucky.
The main director of the camp, and I've stayed in touch all of these years. And we mention it every now and then, but he has made an agreement with me that we will not discuss it with others.
Yeah, or children.
Especially parents.
That was so smart of you to pick as your partner in crime someone with power. That was yeah, thank you. Bye, Jim. Bye-bye. Bruce, I think about people who have a fishing tradition with their buddies or their kids. We're on a certain day. It might be the start of fishing season, or it might be in the summer, and they go to the same bridge, and this is what they do. And then there's the tradition of the ball game, where you go with a particular person to a particular kind of ball game.
Yes, yes. We used to have a touch football game with three families, and the rule was, which ended, by the way, in a delicious breakfast, and the rule was that it was always a tie score at the end. That was that. Otherwise, it was anything goes. But toward the end, if one team was two touchdowns down, the other team would just lie on the ground until they'd scored their two touchdowns.
Marguerite, this is Faith Middleton with Bruce Clements. Go ahead.
Hi. There must be something about charity events because the gingerbread house was started with a charity event, but ours also started with a charity event. This is going on about 30 years. We were at an art auction at our synagogue with very good friends of ours, and my husband and the other couple's husband kept trying to outbid each other so the other one would get stuck with a mystery package. And it went back and forth and back and forth, and the amount went up and up and up. And finally, we got stuck with the package. And the package, this grand art package, got unwrapped, and it was the ugliest bowl anybody had ever seen. It was in the early 80s, and it was one of these faux Santa Fe things. And after about a year or two, And we eat each at each other's house very often. We both love to cook and eat, and we were both the four kids, and I was looking at her buffet in her dining room, and I thought to myself, boy, that thing is jam-packed. I wonder how often she actually goes into it. So the next time I was there, I planted the bowl in her house, in their house, to see how long it would take for them to realize that they were now stuck with this bowl. And it took almost a year till she was taking out some trays or something and found it. And they were beside themselves. And the thing has been, we now... they have two sets of twins. We have one set of twins by coincidence. And we have spent 30 years planting that bowl in each other's houses. We were once away for Passover, and a package came to our hotel. It was the bowl. Our children now are plotting on how to get the bowl. We are now in possession, but we never admit to each other who has it, so the other one might think it's been planted.
Any chance that that person's listening right now?
Probably not.
Okay, so then here's the deal. I would make a dinner date with them and have them bring the one of the food, you know, one of the foods from the menu to the table in front of, and bring it, put it right down in front of one of your...
Actually, that was... done.
Oh, it's done. Oh, I play.
We met on neutral territory, and the bowl actually doesn't stand up. So it was put down and kind of tipped over.
This is bad.
But anyway, our children now.
This is a bad taste tradition,
planting.
Is what this is.
Anyway,
thank you.
So that's,
thank you so much for being on the show. It's a great story to end with. Bruce Clements, always a pleasure, and I will see you soon.
Yes.
Okay. As always, this show is about the richness of life. Find the books, people, recipes, wine, and easy cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.